You're listening to the Tech Gaming Podcast, World 10-7. I'm your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me today is an engorged troop of troublemakers, starting with our own Raging Cajun. That's Sean Nola Kirkland.
Oi.
Next, in order of seniority, is Tech Gaming's answer to Natalie Portman, the future award-winning and injection-filling Sage Samurai Age Morris Green.
Why injection filling?
I don't know. And from the Black Swan to the Blue Swim, I present the menace from Tennessee, Eric Blue Swim.
Hey, that's me.
And making sure the menace doesn't take over the show with either tentacle or tablet talk is the lawman, Jeremy Lamont.
I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
So we got a lot of cover today, so let me start. Hit my targets fast and hit them hard. One of the things I want to talk about first was Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Future Soldier. Got to take a breath after that. Which, if you haven't read the review, know that it's an intense, well-designed action, not really strategy game. That was pretty fun for me. And I ended up giving it a B+ because, well, I enjoyed the campaign, the multiplayer, and to a lesser extent, the guerrilla mode, which is, you know, kind of like a horde mode for a team of players. But there's something I felt that I needed to discuss, and that the score for me reflects this kind of objective evaluation. But subjectively, as someone who loved the old Ghost Recon games, you know, the ones, the original, like, Xbox ones, going back to 2001, I couldn't help but think of how Sage kind of felt betrayed by the changes Ubisoft did to Splinter Cell Conviction. For me, the firefights of the old Ghost Recon games were these really tense, delicious bits where you crept up on the enemy, and then you'd get as close as you thought you could without tipping them off, and you were, like, you know, about 100 yards away. But Future Soldier, you know, it's got a little bit of strategy here and there, but it's got more of that thrill ride shooting gallery feel to it, which I honestly think has been done to death by, you know, the modern warfares and the battlefields. So here's the thing. I have this nagging feeling that I'm settling with Future Soldier, since most of the kind of, you know, more realistic military sims are on PC now. You know, Operation Flashpoint and to a lesser extent SOCOM are pretty much dead. And you know, obviously, there doesn't seem to be an audience for these type of, you know, console shooters. Why? Let me ask, throw it out there to you guys. Why do you think that is?
Different audience.
I think that we've just been dealing with the kind of a saturation in that market for a long time. I mean, to me, and I don't know if this is just the way the game looks, but, you know, a few shows back we had talked about SOCOM mm-hmm. 4, and to me, maybe it's just, you know, aesthetically or whatever, but Ghost Recon Future Soldier looks a lot like SOCOM 4 to me. Is that true, or is that just, is there any similarity there?
No, yeah, you're completely on.
We had observed, you know, at that time too, you know, it's one of those things where a lot of people kind of liked Zipper Interactive, but not a lot of people bought the game. And I don't know if Ghost Recon, you know, maybe it can coast on the name recognition, but I just saw the trailers for that. I haven't played it myself, but I said, gosh, that sure looks a lot like SOCOM 4.
And you know what? It plays very similar too in the, you know, you're always in cover kind of thing. The mechanics of it's about the same blend of realism with, you know, whatever arcadey, you know, typical first person shooter stuff.
I think too, the sort of the danger with multiplayer shooters when they focus so much on multiplayer is I don't think people are comfortable buying them until they're popular. You know, mm-hmm. I think the concern is I already know hundreds of thousands of people are playing Call of Duty. I could try this Ghost Recon game, but if it doesn't take off, then I feel like I've wasted my money because that community is not there. Okay. So until it gets perfect scores, I don't think people are really going to adopt it. Mm. I almost think that having a different game to try to attract a smaller audience with something a little bit more tactical would be almost a smarter decision.
Right. Alternative programming.
Yeah. But I think you need to budget accordingly, and I don't think they're going to do that with a Ghost Recon game.
Yeah.
And from what I can tell, you're saying that it's not really tickling any new nerve endings for you either. I mean, is there anything that stands out?
I mean, it's good. It's solid.
In any way about
them? You know, when I was playing the different levels, they're well designed, and you can't really criticize the game for not delivering. You know, it's like a thrill ride, but I feel like I've already played that. And the big draw for me, one of the things I said in the review, is the technology. You're playing technology that's, you know, 15, maybe 20 years out, and that's really fun. And having that technical advantage is kind of a thrill for the player. But beyond that, you know, been there, done that.
Yeah.
So it sounds a lot like my my review for that one JRPG that everybody yelled at me for. Tales of something. I played that game all the way through, and I can't remember what it was. But I think it was one of the Tales games, and I gave it a C because it was a good JRPG, but
right. It
wasn't something I haven't played before mm-hmm. hundreds of times, and people got really upset about that, so I don't know.
No, this one's fun, but I, you know, it's the whole, you know, objective, subjective, you know, type of thing. You know, it's not a game that I really enjoy, but I think other people will enjoy. So anyway, I was talking a little bit about PCs on, my PC was dying, needs a new power supply, and Sean, you know, it was a slim case, so GPUs had to be low profile. And right about now, that really doesn't give you the power to play games, most modern games, at a decent frame rate. So I spent a little bit of change and bought a quad-core, you know, off-the-shelf HP, which came with a Radeon 6550, you know, integrated card. Or graphics. And now I had heard that with the integrated chipsets like this one, you could buy another GPU and the two would work together with this program called Crossfire. But with the model I bought, you have to go in, you got to tweak the BIOS setting, which voids your warranty, you know, which is kind of a little bit of a bummer. But anyway, you know, for an off-the-shelf PC, it plays and it performs pretty well. I've been going back to some of my Steam purchases, one of the things that I bought a while ago was Arma 2. And, you know, I'm getting Arma 2 at 45 frames per second, and that's scratching that military sim itch for me. So it's kind of a big improvement, and I'm really, you know, enjoying it, looking forward to Arma 3, seeing that, playing that at E3. The other thing, I've been going back to my Steam purchases, and I feel like, one of the things I bought, and Jeremy, you know this, I bought Civ 5, the Game of the Year edition, for $12. Which is just an amazing value. But I got hooked on that title that longtime listeners will remember. Tide Gear mentioned a few years ago. It's the first part of the title has like 20 A's in the title, but the easier to pronounce subtitle is a Reckless Disregard for Gravity. And it's this VR kind of base jumping simulation, which tasks you with constantly taking a risk by falling very close to the sides of the buildings. And, you know, it's just kind of a lot of fun, 80 different levels and just, you know, simple, well-designed, has a sense of humor about it. Great fun. And also, speaking of Tide Gear and the spirit of Tide Gear, I'm playing a whole lot of the old XCOM, which is remains a lot of fun and has aged particularly well. So that's me. I want to keep it short, quick, so we can move on because we got a lot of people today. So let me pass the baton to Sean.
Trails in the Sky. That was the game I was trying to think of earlier.
You know, I was looking for Tales. I was like, and I didn't review a Tales game. What the hell? What was wrong with me?
I could remember it was Trails. Was the anagram.
Yeah. How could you forget that?
Okay. Anyway, so what have I been playing? That is a good question. Real quick, I'm going to cut this part out, but we lost somebody because I'm getting an error that we lost somebody in the call. So hopefully this is all still recording.
I lost and then came back in. So
okay. I have that Blue Swim is recycling.
Yep,
he's recycling. Has dropped.
He's grabbing bottles right now.
All right. Yep. Well, we'll bring him back in when it's time. But anyway, so what have I been playing? I was pretty desperate to play something new on my Vita, so when they came out with something new, I downloaded it, and it was Tabletop Tanks. And let me tell you something about Tabletop Tanks. It's bad. It's, like, really bad. But it's an AR card game, right? So you put down one of your AR cards, and then you put down two more to define the corners of the play area.
Mm-hmm.
And then it does this little fancy thing where it basically stretches out whatever texture, I guess you could call it, is near the card, so it looks like the card's not there. And then you get a little obstacle course for this tank to have a really kind of slow, boring twin stick shooter experience. But it's, well, for one thing, the cards are too big. Like, I know that sounds really dumb, but it's hard to get that far away from the table.
Right.
So you end up having to play it on the floor. Mm-hmm. And then I never really realized how, when I'm playing a game, my arms move. I don't know if it's because it's an AR game or because, you know, I'm trying to center my tank or whatever, mm-hmm. but I'll usually end up losing sight of the playing field, and then it'll have to reset, and it's just really obnoxious. But even if it wasn't super obnoxious, just trying to keep everything in the frame, it's not a very fun game. Like I said, it's a twin stick shooter, but it's got incredibly slow pace. It's got no personality whatsoever. It's $2. I could see paying half that.
No, now, am I thinking there was one where you would draw your own? Am I thinking of the wrong thing here? Is this the one where you create your own tanks, or are these are preset tanks that you just set up on your own little playing field?
I think you don't draw your own tanks. No, there are tanks you can buy. I don't know if you can take them apart and put them back together. I basically played through the first several stages and then stopped. And I didn't really like. I got kind of fed up with it, and so I didn't really do much into the customization of it. Just because I'm not going to want to customize anything in this game that I don't want to play. But, I mean, the touch controls, this is becoming a problem I'm noticing with the Vita game, is that they will use touch controls for things that don't need it. And when you're doing something like a twin-stick shooter, where your thumbs are pretty much pretty occupied outside of the screen, and it asks you to touch something, like even if it's just in the menu or something, it just doesn't feel natural yet. You know, like that big screen, I want to touch with my index finger, not my thumb. And if the further away from the edges you get, you don't want to touch it with your thumb anyway.
Yeah, I can't reach my thumb across that thing to begin with. I mean, that's
Exactly. So
It sounds like it's just a bad game, and they threw AR to cover that.
No, I think it's they wanted to make an AR twin stick shooter, which is a novel concept, but I just don't think it works. And I think they slow it down so much to make up for the fact that sometimes the lighting's not good and you can't really see what you're doing.
I think the crossover isn't quite there yet. I think part of like having, you know, sticks that you're using as opposed to touch screens, it's convenient to have the things that you're moving be easily located so that you can touch whatever that is that controls your movement and then move from there. And when you incorporate touch table stuff, I feel like it sort of pulls that away from the convenience aspect for the coolness factor, but I feel like that overlap isn't really there yet.
Yeah, the only AR game I've played that was novel and not irritating was in Little Deviants. They have the one part where you're in a turret, and they just don't model anything, any background. So your camera is on making the background for this turret game. And that's the only AR game I think I've played that. I'm like, okay, this is cute.
See, I think I would have liked it a lot had you had the ability to take out a piece of paper, kind of draw some stuff, whether in color, crayons, or whatever, and that's your map, and then you take a picture of that, and then that remains kind of fixed, and then would populate enemies and, you know, kind of figure out where the walls are and things like that. That would be kind of cool, and that way you could kind of
design levels. That would be really cool.
Well, what I was excited about was...
And that way you don't
worry
about moving and, you know, shaking it.
What I was all excited about was in the previews for it, they showed them like driving their tanks around bottles and stuff. So before I even started, you know, like I had this really great table that's the perfect height for if it wasn't a piece of shit having my arms propped over.
Right.
And I set up like little obstacles, you know, I had my PS3 controller and I had a coaster and I had a Coke and the table was too dark. And the I had enough light, but there was this one light that's kind of direct, and so it just didn't work, so I had to move. But then, yeah, like when you actually have the course set up, if you have anything in your way, you know, it just stuff clips through it, and then you're irritated because you can't see part of the battlefield, and you have to move something. But in order to move it, then you screw up your battlefield, and you have to wait for it to adjust. And
see, I also thought it was what you assumed that it would be. And that sounds a lot more fun.
it was.
But that would be really cool if they took sort of like your idea, Deagle. If they took instead of what you're saying, if like the old games like Myst and everything, where you actually had to keep track of where you were going and you had to make your own little map. Right. If they made it so that you could take a, like you're making a map as you play whatever the game is, like for a like RPG kind of game, and then you take a picture of that and you put it in the tape. Like you keep track of your own stuff via whatever this touch table is.
Yeah,
I think the real like. AR games would work really well if with a setup like what's that card game? Eye of Judgment.
Yeah,
I think that sort of AR thing works where like, don't give us cards, give us tokens, and then you can say this token counts for this piece, this token counts for this piece, and let us play like a board game.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's the kind of...
I never did finish a game of Eye of Judgment because it would end
glitchy.
Well, yeah, you had about a minute to lay down your card, and it would recognize. And if it didn't recognize, then the other person, you know, you take a pass. Yeah. And then if you took a pass in a game that was so tightly competitive, you'd instantly lose. And imagine, you know, you have the perfect card. You're going to trump your opponent, but it wouldn't recognize it. That was the most frustrating thing.
But camera technology has come a long way since then. Yeah. Like, I feel like if they tried to do something like Eye of Judgment with a Kinect, you could do it. You just have to convince people to have a... It would have to be a heavy base for a Kinect, but I feel like you could do that now. But I feel like the idea of having the camera in your hand and doing an AR game like this, where you're looking at something stationary, just doesn't work.
Right.
But in what's the word I'm looking for?
Garbage.
No, I'm trying to say to not waste any more time. The only other game I've been playing that's worth mentioning is Avengers Alliance, which is actually a Facebook game. Because I wanted to say I've played a Facebook game.
Why?
I don't know. Because it's the Avengers, and I love Captain America. Yeah. But that game has a really fun fight system, and it almost makes it worth playing, except for the ways they try and get you to make money are irritating. Because like there's a bunch of different types of currency that you use for different things. There's silver. There's shield points. There's command points. There's... ISO, which is like this ooze, and there's gold, right? Which gold is like your basic currency that you can break down into any of the other elements. And it's like, if you want to level somebody up, you have to level them up to a certain amount of experience, then pay like 10 command points and 5,000 silver to actually make them gain a level. Otherwise, they just become a waste of space because you can't like gain any more experience with that character anymore. But it's like, okay, I have something I want to do. Sounds like it had
more currencies in the European Union.
Exactly. And the problem is, all that stuff is available in-game, right? You can find all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the chances of you having everything that you need at a given time is just zero. And they have these missions that, like, at the end of this mission, you unlock a character, and this is the only way you can do it. But this mission's only available this month. And next month, you won't be able to get this character again unless we release her again. And so I've been doing that. But it's one of those things that those missions are much harder, so you need higher level characters. Well, my characters aren't high enough level yet, and given that, I don't think I can earn enough currency in-game in order to beat these missions to get this character. So it's like, yes, they're offering me this thing for free, but logistically, I'm going to have to spend some money in order to get this free content.
So Sean, what is this? Is this like a top-down like dungeon hacking? I mean, what sort of game is this exactly?
It's a JRPG without the dungeon crawling elements, if that makes any sense. So you'll embark on a mission and you'll see a city, and it'll be like there are battles in all of these buildings, and it's more about preparation. So you're like, okay, I know this battle, I'm going to have these types of soldiers, and based on our sort of rock paper scissors things, I'm going to want to bring these heroes with me, and you know, fight them, and it's a very Grandia style actual fight system. And the rock, paper, scissors mechanic they have in there is actually really cool, because there's five different classes. Each class is good against a certain other class, but it's not sort of like, oh, well, you know, this is a tactician, so he does more damage against infiltrators. It's that this specific character is a tactician. He has some sort of ability against infiltrators, but it's different depending on characters. So, like, Hawkeye's a tactician. If he fights an infiltrator, he'll get an extra attack that turn. So you can kind of use that to, you know, I'm attacking these weak infiltrators, so they have an extra attack against somebody stronger. Or, you know, somebody might have one that if they get attacked by a certain type of character, it boosts their defense or something. Yeah, so it's a really good fight system. It's just it's unfortunately attached to sort of an asinine Facebook structure, which is kind of crazy. It's also one of those things that you don't have to spend money if you convince all of your friends to play, because the more friends you have playing, every day when you start up, you can you automatically get stuff from all of your friends. So it's either bug all your friends to play with you or spend money, and that's that. But that's kind of just saying, hey, it's a Facebook game.
Out of curiosity, how much time have you put into this? You seem like you're pretty well into the like the mechanics of it.
More than I should probably admit. It's one of those things that because I don't know if this is all Facebook games or what, but everything is time based. So like you level somebody up and it's like you gotta wait for half an hour, or you know you. Every fight you do takes 10 energy.
Cool down. Yeah.
Cool
down timers.
Basically. So are you going to keep playing it? Or?
Yeah, because it's something to do when in between phone calls at work. That's kind of what ends up happening is I'll take a bunch of support calls, and then there will be some dead time. I'll be like, oh, I'm going to load up Facebook, see what's going on. Oh, Carlos sent me something in Avengers. I'll use up all my energy right now, and then I'll go back to it. So, I mean, I guess it is addictive.
So
like,
awesome game. NOLA confirmed.
Yes. Yeah. It's not Camp good. It's just... You can play
it's not a good game. It's like drugs. You just can't help but keep playing it, even though it's not that great.
It's got Captain America in it, and someday I'm going to get to play as him.
Wait, so you're like, not even... Who are you?
So far I've got She-Hulk, Ms. Marvel, Cyclops, Hawkeye, Iron Man. I don't remember who else. I think I have two more. Scarlet Witch. Or, not Scarlet Witch.
Black Widow? Oh. How do you get... I mean, I know Scarlet...
I always use, because she's a red, because she's a redhead and Scarlett Johansson in the movie. I think that might be it. That might be all I have.
Okay. But, fair amount of characters.
I would say Blue, what have you been playing? But he seems to have disappeared.
Hey, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. There you are. So,
I'm back from the dead. Rise from your grave.
Since you're not dead, what have you been playing?
Actually, I dug out an old PC game. That's right, I said PC. Even though it's me, I still said PC. It is the original Command & Conquer Red Alert. Came out back in, I believe, 97 or 98, something like that. And this is the first time I've actually sat down and played through the campaign missions. Whenever I played it, it was usually go straight to the skirmish mode and build as many Tesla coils as possible. but this time I actually sat down and played through the entire Allied campaign. For those of you who never played Command & Conquer, you have it's a 2-CD set. You have one disc for the Allied forces, which are the good guys. And then you have the second disc is for the Soviets, which are the bad guys in the Red Alert series. And basically the storyline premise is that Albert Einstein discovered time travel, went back in time, shook Adolf Hitler's hand as he was coming out of prison, and that somehow changed the future. There was no Nazi Germany, and now the Soviets are like the superpower.
Yeah, like they get all glowy in the cutscene. I remember being just like, I had no idea what was going on in that opening cinema.
Neither did I, really. I mean, I had to wiki it to really truly grasp what was going on. I mean, it's one thing with like Command & Conquer Red Alert 3 where, you know, you have Tim Curry and another guy going back in time and he shakes out, Tim Curry shakes Albert Einstein's hand and he just disintegrates into a pile of dust. It's like, oh my God, he killed Albert Einstein.
Wow.
But in the original Red Alert, it's, you know, he shakes his hand, you know, hey, how you doing? And then he comes back to the future and it's like there's no Nazi Germany, and instead it's the Soviets. And it's just kind of a WTF.
Which is weird, because you'd think Albert Einstein would know better than to affect the past, given that he's so brilliant.
Yeah, the space-time continuum. I swear, I rewatch that Red Alert 3 clip with the terrible, terrible, hokey, super fun acting in it at least once a year, because it's just so damned... It's just so damn good and so damn awful at the same time. But anyways, back to Red Alert. You know, I went through the Allied campaign. I actually have finished in about, I guess it was over about a week and a half or 2 weeks. And I got to tell you, I mean, I've played a lot of the Red Alert skirmish missions, but, or you know, skirmish maps. But playing the campaign missions, I mean, it was different for a change. Some of the missions I found, though, were kind of old school trial and error type. Like, there is something that you need to do. Like, for example, when you start up the last mission in the Allied campaign, you have Tanya and two thieves. And if you do nothing, this one soldier shoots a barrel, boom, all three of them get wiped out in the first 5 seconds. So you have to go, when the mission loads, you have to select the three of them, drop them down to the south for a little bit, drop them down to the south a little bit, let the guy shoot the barrel, then you shoot him, and there have been numerous cases like that, and other missions had time limits in addition to the trial and error, so you'd have to play through, like a 45-minute mission just to figure out, oh, I needed to do this with this guy, and instead of letting this guy get killed, I should have saved him and done this instead, and move this guy here. It's old school and not necessarily the best kind of way. But I had to hit a game fac for it a couple of times, especially with the timed missions, because you have to have your shit, you have to know exactly what you're doing. And if you don't, you're fucked, and you have to replay the entire save over again. And if you get to a certain point and you're thinking, okay, I've got a good setup, you might not have enough time to get everything done because engineers run too slow or whatever. And so you're fucked, and you need to start all the way over.
And
aside from that,
too, this I was going to say this this game was developed by Westwood, who had previously been known for Dune and Dune 2, I guess it was Dune 2, and then they after this actually did Dune 2000. So it's kind of interesting to see how they essentially created that genre. And to see kind of some of the missteps that they may have made over the years. I never got into Command & Conquer too much myself, but I wanted to point out, I don't know if everybody's aware of this, but Electronic Arts, who had purchased Westwood, they actually made Command & Conquer Red Alert. It's freeware now. You can actually just download the entire game. I believe EA has it on one of their servers somewhere. So if you do a web search for that, you can actually play the entire Red Alert game for free. Both discs, and then it was also released on PlayStation Network, and I'm not sure if it got released on, I don't think it was, I guess it would have been the PlayStation version, so it's also on PSN.
That's really cool.
All three of the PS1 Command & Conquer games are on there, and if you have a fetish for having the physical disc, there is Command & Conquer The First Decade, which has the first 12 games, expansion packs, whatever, all on.
That would actually be really great. So that sounds really rad.
Yeah, it is. I've heard it's a little bit glitchy and you need to patch it or something like that. But aside from that, it's like $20 for God knows how many hours.
A year of RTSing.
Was Red Alert the one that had the commando missions where you basically get like the one or two commando units?
Yeah, that's what he was talking about. And then you have Tanya as the operative, and she's pretty much like a hero character. I think that, and that was one of the things I was thinking of, was how in Dune 2, which I think was Westwood's game right before this, it was pretty bread and butter. There wasn't a lot of, embellishment on that formula, but in the Red Alert series, Command and Conquer, they started to get into, hero characters, special missions, things like that, which was kind of neat.
Yeah. Dune 2 was actually way before Red Alert. That was on Genesis.
But that's pretty much what I've been playing. I also played a little bit of Virtua Fighter 5. I've been going back to that in preparation for Final Showdown next month. Ooh, boy. Final Showdown is going to have a rather unique DLC strategy. You buy the main game, which has, all the characters, the modes, yada, yada, yada. And then, like, 6 costumes for every fighter. And that's going to be $15 or 1,200 Microsoft points or whatever. And then if you want to buy costumes on top of it, or, the costumes and accessories, which, there's, 2 to, 900 pieces per character, depending on who you choose or whatever. And if you buy one accessory pack it's $5 or 400 points. And then if you or if you want to buy like 9 or 10 of the characters, they've been the roster's been split into two bundles. It's $15 and 1200 points, whatever, for what for each pack. So basically the game with all of the DLC extras and stuff like that, it's going to be $45, which is budget price and better than a $60 retail disc with on-disc DLC.
That sort of DLC, though, seems like such a waste of development money. Because, like, I'm trying to think of – I think it was maybe EGM. This is way, way back, you know, pre-DLC kind of days, maybe back in the PS1 days where they were talking about the Street Fighter games and how, you know, they were starting to put, you know, 4, 5, or 6 costumes in for every character. And they're trying to figure out if that was worth it, having more than just the player one and player two costumes. And so they were going around, like, watching people play fighting games. And what they found is that almost everybody uses or prefers to use the default. Mm-hmm. And with, like, certain fringe cases, like Ryu, a lot of people liked playing as the second player Ryu. That's the Dark Ryu.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's like, why, especially for fighting games where everybody just wants their most iconic uniform anyway, mm-hmm. why would you expect people are going to pay $5 for that?
Well, you know, with the Virtual Fighter 5 games and Virtual Fighter 4 was like this as well, there was a ton of customization that you could do with the characters. You could make, you know, you could have two of the same character going at it and they'd hardly even look alike. It's mm-hmm. kind of a personalization type thing. It's like putting your own skin on a car in like Forza Motorsport. It's just a little bit of a way to customize that fighter to make him unique from everybody else if you're playing online. Mm-hmm. But part of the problem is, and I'm not sure, you know, the game's not out yet, so I'm not sure if they're going to have something like this or not. I've heard that they aren't going to have like a download, content download where if you download it, you don't get the costumes, but you can see them online.
You're paying for just yourself to see it?
Yeah, for yourself and whoever else has bought the DLC. At least that's my understanding of it as now. It might have changed, you know, by the time it's come down, it comes out.
You know, but I feel with the fallout from Street Fighter Cross Tekken, I feel like it's gonna be a long time before people do that again.
Mm. Yeah, I mean I'm looking forward to it. Game itself for $15, it's worth it. I mean, you're getting six costumes if you want variety, and if you want more, you can pay more, and if you don't, you don't have to. It's looking like it's going to be really good. I mean, Virtual Fighter 5 is one of my favorite fighting games of all time. And, it's going to be a day one purchase for me.
Word.
Cool. And that's pretty much it for me.
Sage.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
What's going on in the Albuquerques?
In the Santa Fe's?
Santa Fe's, sorry.
We're sorry for having to sacrifice you to the podcasting gods last time we recorded.
No, I noticed you threw me under the bus. You told everyone I was at rehab, you guys.
That was me.
Oh, I know. I listened. No, I wasn't actually mad about it. And to be nice, Robert sent me a game. To be nice, because of his rehab comment, Deagle sent me a game called Sideway. Not Sideways, which is confusing to try and explain, but Sideway. It's kind of like Fez. It plays with the idea of it. As far as a game goes, I would say it's about 50-50. Like, the mechanics of the idea is that you're a two-dimensional, like, paint person in a three-dimensional world, not like a real actual world, but 3D graphics that on the one hand are kind of cool, and on the other hand, sometimes when the camera pans really quickly, sort of make you nauseous because they're like they're like not so good that, you know, you can really watch them in fast motion, but when you're moving slowly, they're fine. So it's like that. You somehow get stuck in this world and you're a spray painted guy on a wall. And so you can run along buildings, but you can't come off the building. That dynamic is really cool. Like, it leads to very sort of broad thinking about, you know, if I want to, because when you jump, the direction you are facing down stays down unless you can find a way to get on a different side of a building and change that. So if there's a break in the wall near the roof, you can jump up to the roof, but down will still be down the side of the wall unless you come at the roof from a different angle, and then you can make the, you know, one side of the roof down instead of the walls. Does that make sense? Sort of. Sort of makes
once
sense.
Once I'm seeing on my head, yeah.
Okay. So that way it's really cool. It tries to be as clever as Fez that way, where, you know, you're trying to look at things in at a different angle to determine where you should go. But after that point, the coolness factor sort of drops off a little bit because the game is not that informative. Like, it doesn't warn you that certain things are going to kill you right away, whereas other things just injure you. It doesn't really tell you what's going to kill you and what won't. And the soundtrack, pretty bad. It's this rapper going on and on in a way that makes you want to turn the music off and turn some other music on, which is unfortunate in games in general. So
sorry, I sent you a turkey then.
What? No, it's whatever. I mean, it was free, so it's fine, and it was cool to try. But I would say that, like, if you were going to spend the money on a game, you should get Fez because the soundtrack's a lot better and it's cuter and probably a little more thoughtful than this game.
So is this primarily a puzzle game, or is it a platformer, or is it a puzzle platformer, or what's the
no? It's mostly
the main idea, just navigating.
It's just platforming. You're collecting coins, and then that's the other thing is it doesn't tell you that there's these like secret tokens that you're trying to collect until it's sort of too late. So if you didn't guess that that might be true to begin with, which I kind of did because they're different looking, but there are certain areas where, like, once you jump past a certain part, you can't get back. And while I appreciate the desire to keep the momentum moving forward, there should be a way where if you're thoughtful enough, you can go back to a place you've been, but it doesn't really allow for that. So if you don't realize that to begin with, then you're already screwed if you're going for, like, achievements or score or whatever. So that one wasn't great, but it's okay. I don't know how much it costs. If it's cheap, it's worth looking at.
What system is it on?
I know it came out on PC and on PlayStation, so you played it on, did you say you played it on PC?
Yeah. Yep.
PC.
Played it on PC. Other PC games. So Botanicula I have played, which is from the Humble Bundle that came out quite a while ago, actually, but I haven't been on the podcast since then. It's by Amanita, which is the same people that did Machinarium. And
Amanita, but yes.
Amanita, what? I'm terrible with names. Company.
I really love this studio. I really am a big fan.
I do too. No, I do too. And I think one of the things that I love so much about them is that they're inventive. Their games are different. They've also made a couple movies. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Which when you get, I would recommend the Humble Bundle. I think you can still get it. I would recommend it
no,
to everybody. Because
you,
can you not?
No.
Well, if you missed out, that's terrible because you get, you get Machinarium, you get Botanicula, you get the soundtracks for both, and they're some of my favorite soundtracks ever of any. They're some of my favorite music of any music I have. What's unique and cool about Botanicula? It's a puzzler just like Machinarium. But what's cool is that it starts out kind of simple, and I almost thought it was going to be like a dumbed down version, like an easier version for a younger market. But then it definitely gets more complex as it goes on. It has a lot more involvement than you would think it would. And it's another one of those kind of, they don't give you any explanation, but in a good way, where you have to actually just click on things and notice that there are things that you click on and then see what those things do. So you have to have a really explorative mind to do well at the game because you have to be thinking like, well, what else could I maybe do with this? And all of the sound effects are made with like people making those sound effects, so like a bug flies by and the noise for the bug is somebody going like, which is really cool. And all of the music is either it's a combination of like guitar, a little bit of guitar and drums, that's the only really instrumentality, but everything else is like clapping and vocals and weird noises made by people, and it works out really well. It's really, really phenomenal sound design for that game. And it's a lot of fun, and it's very cute, and instead of robots, it's little plant parts, which is cool, too, because you get to see all the different parts of, like, this tree that you're doing all these puzzles in, so you go down into the root system for a while, and there's different things down there from, like, up in the branches. It's a great game.
And they, the art, I think, was the other. You mentioned already kind of the art style, but that was they were nominated both at the IGDs, Indie Game Development. Well, the IGF, I guess, the Indie Game Festival. They were nominated both for design, or I'm sorry, graphics and audio.
Yeah.
And so it's supposed to be a pretty interesting experience. You'd mentioned it. I just wanted to mention this as well. They are for folks who maybe didn't get a chance to get in on the bundle, or you know, they're also Botanicula was also for sale on GOG.com. But they actually have a free game called Samorost, which is sort of it's just short, you know, maybe 20 to 30 minutes if you're good at these sorts of puzzle games. But you can actually go to their website, Amanita-Design, and I believe you can just play it for free right on there. So,
oh, cool. I know you can also get the games, and I'm sure you could get their movies too from them and their soundtracks. And what's nice is that if you buy, you can buy the game, the Botanicula and Machinarium on Steam, but if you go to their website, they throw in the soundtracks for free. Yeah. Which if you like video game music at all, you should buy the games just for that. Their soundtracks are really, really phenomenal.
They're very good.
Did I miss this bundle?
I don't know. It came out a little while ago. I should have told you. I didn't think you would miss it. Come on, man.
It was an interesting situation too, because they actually they got a sort of an exclusive launch on GOG.com. Mm-hmm. And then it was weird because the Humble Bundle people then released I don't know if it was on the same day or the day right before, but they did this Amanita bundle on, you know, over at the Humble site. And mm-hmm. so then on GOG, they said, well, you can get, I can't remember what they did, but there was this like escalating arms race of Amanita bonus content that you would get. You know, GOG was like, well, if you pre-order it here, you'll get a dollar off and we'll throw in something. And then, you know, at Humble, they were like, oh, well, now we're going to give you this, you know, this movie or this documentary or something. And I don't know what happened there. It was pretty weird.
I think I caught it right at the right time then, because I waited. It had been out, I think, a week and a half or so when I bought it, and for, you know, $5 and change. I mean, I spent a little more than that, but that was the like minimum average you had to pay above.
Yeah.
So for that amount, you got the two movies, the two soundtracks, the two games, and I think one other thing. I can't remember what it was.
And you only paid $5.
No, I paid. No, I paid more. I think I paid $14.
Okay.
which is a lot for me, $14. I mean, I'm cheap because I'm broke right now.
I bought this week's indie bundle that saves the polar bears.
Ah, very nice.
Which is, I couldn't resist the polar bears.
You can't.
Are you serious? Is there a polar bear one?
Yeah. Some of the funds go to that.
Does it have polar bears in the games?
No polar bears. That would have been great. No pandas
either.
It's a huge
scam.
It's a big lie.
Yeah, some guy legally changed his name to Polar Bear, and he's taken all the money and put it on drugs.
The polar bears are a lie.
Oh.
Anyway, so check that game out. Definitely, definitely, definitely check that game out if you have any impetus for puzzle games at all. And then the other thing that I've mainly been playing is Diablo 3.
Mm-hmm.
I was a huge naysayer about the beta, you may recall. And I will say, if you're going to play, you got to turn on elective mode, which allows you to actually like parse out your skills the way you want to, instead of sort of one from each category for each number slot.
That's cool.
So that helps a lot, because part of what was frustrating to me was, and I may have missed that in the beta. It's possible that I did. I don't remember seeing it as an option. But it at least allows you to, you know, if you want all sort of aggressive fight skills instead of one healing and one summoning and what, you know, it lets you parse that out a lot better.
So how big is the tech tree?
Well, because it's runes instead now. So you'll have... So, like, let's say monks have mantras, okay? Mm-hmm. So there's four unlockable mantras, and each one has, like, five or six different runes that you can apply that you get unlocked at different levels. And then depending on what runes you apply, you can choose how that skill plays out. So you can choose which mantra, and then as whatever level you are, you can choose which rune you want to apply to it. So instead of like a tree, it's more like you've got a bunch of stones and you can sort of stick one to each thing that you have.
Makes sense.
But it does allow for a little bit of dynamics, dynamism. Is that a word? Can I make that a word? Allows for dynamism.
As long as it refers to dinosaurs, yeah.
it is a little more dynamic than I was afraid it would be, because it actually lets you sort of, you know, my flying spinning kick has a different side effect than someone else's flying spinning kick, which is cool if you want to, if you want to party with other people. Like, we have two monks in this party that I'm in, and it's fine because we've gone very different ways with our runes, and so it doesn't end up being redundant.
Did you feel the urge to buy anything from the store? Have you?
Which store? What store?
The in-game
auction
store.
House.
Yeah, the auction house. Sorry. Thanks, Sean.
The auction house?
Fuck. Yes.
No, because the blacksmithing is pretty proficient. And also, I mean, I think picking stuff up from the auction house is totally legitimate. I have made a killing selling shit in the auction house. Mm-hmm. Because everyone, this is really stupid. Everybody sells, and now I'm going to give away my trick, so maybe it won't work anymore. But I feel like if you have a brain, you're doing this anyway. Everybody sells rare items for like 25,000 gold, 35,000 gold. And it's,
so
you know,
it's like,
I'll
what,
get a
price fixing.
Well, it's weird because I'll get an item that I could sell in game to one of the vendors for like 300 gold. I'll go to the auction house. I'll sell it for 500 gold. People buy them instantly because everybody else is selling something for 25,000 gold and like everyone fights over it. But I get paid out instantly and I'm making 2 to 3 times as much as I would make in game anyway, because it's still more than I would be getting if I just sold it to a vendor.
And this is all in-game currency. So they delayed, or they have put on high. They're not going to do the real money auction house. Is my understanding now? Is that right?
The thing that they have up says that they're going to add it at the end of the month. That's cool. I mean, I understand why they're doing it, because people sell stuff for real money anyway. So there's an option for anyone who doesn't know what this is about. There's an option where you can go to a real money auction house instead of a gold in-game auction house. And you're selling items for real money. I think if you pay real money for a video game weapon, you're an idiot. But if that's what you want to do with your spare money, you know, go for it.
Well, what if the you reason... sell stuff for real money? Then what are you?
Then you're capitalizing.
Capitalist.
That's right.
Well, I mean, the whole way that started, though, was that in WoW, they didn't have a way to factor that in. And what people were doing is, they're going to work. They're telling their friends about this WoW game they were super into. People would want to play, and then they'd want to play with their friends who've already been playing, and they would pay real money for that opportunity. You know, like if I want to play with Sage, and Sage is way leveled up high and has all this great gear, I want to play with her, but my dinky little level 1 monk man is not going to cut it. So I would pay for either a higher level character or higher level items.
Mm-hmm. But it's short-sighted, because the higher level, I mean, we do this all the time. I had two, I didn't really want to do a Diablo run this fast, but these two, I guess you should spoiler that, but these two friends of mine who are much, much higher than I am were like, oh no, we'll come play with you, it's fine. And because they're so much higher than me, we just like stormed through everything and just raped everything, which, whatever. I mean, if I really cared, I can go back and play it again. So it's not
like
really...
That sounds like it'd take a lot of time.
No, it was really
raping
easy.
Raping everything?
No, that's what I'm saying. It was phenomenally ridiculous. It was like, I'm actually not going to come up with any analogies because they're all going to be grotesque and terrible and probably shouldn't have brought up raping anyway. But we cut through them like butter. Is that better? Let's say that.
That is much better.
There you go.
Butter is the rapiest of dairy products.
That's true, compliment. Actually. Most often used more than any other dairy product.
Is that the Last Tango in Paris reference?
I've never seen it.
So anyway, D3, not as bad as I thought it would be. I still think it's a little meh, but it's okay. I mean, I was worried it was going to be like meh, and it's like, no, it's pretty okay. Blacksmithing's cool.
Can't be wrong.
No, they can be, but they're not in this case. I mean, it's all right.
No.
And blacksmithing's cool, and it's not like WoW blacksmithing, which I'm glad. I'm glad that all of the ideas they got from WoW and then put into D3, they made it more Diablo than WoW. Like, blacksmithing doesn't feel like World of Warcraft blacksmithing, and I was really afraid that they were going to, like, really hybridize it and make it like, oh, well, it's fine, WoW kids, just come play Diablo. But it doesn't feel that way, actually. So
after hearing you call it D3 a few times, I wonder if D3 publisher maker of Ben 10 is getting more hits on their websites these days.
Possibly. Maybe I should call it that more often.
six million Ben 10 buyers, can't be wrong.
Right. I was thinking this guy at 3.
Oh, no, Diablo 3. Anyway, but let's move on because I know we want to get to E3 stuff.
Well, no, we got Jeremy. Yeah.
Oh, I know. So let's talk to Jeremy. Jeremy, what have you been playing?
All right, well, let me just rape through my list of games here that I've been playing. And
did you say rape or rape?
I'm just kidding. All right, I'm just kidding. Well, I've been playing a lot of sort of alternative kinds of games. You know, not a lot of shooters, a lot of creative stuff. I want to start by talking about Minecraft on the 360, which it's been out for a couple weeks, and everybody knows it's made pretty good showing for itself, breaking records on XBLA. I think they said that it was profitable within an hour, and a lot of people buying Minecraft. And I'm not sure if it's people who have already been playing Minecraft on PC. Of course, Minecraft on PC has been around since, 2006, I think, in some form or another. Mm-hmm. Anyway, somebody's buying it. And on top of that, it is probably one of the – I mean, it's a top-tier price range. I mean, it's a $20 – I'm not sure how many – 2,400 Microsoft points, I think it is, something like that.
1,600?
Or is it, I'm sorry, I always convert the wrong way with Microsoft points.
Those things are impossible to calculate.
Oh, I hate Microsoft points.
Not only that, but they're way too easy to buy. I mean, I understand how there's a convenience thing there, but you've got like a ton of 12-year-olds who are like, I'm just going to add points with mom/dad's card, which is attached to my Xbox account. And then they're like, add 3,000 points. Mom and dad's going, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's like going to like a European country, like a Central European country, and thinking, oh yeah, these are pesos. That's not expensive at all. Which I've had experience with. Anyway, Minecraft is, for those who don't know, I don't know how many people would fall into this category, but Minecraft is a very blocky 3D game that is all about making something out of your environment. You essentially start out with, you start out with your bare hands, and all you can really do is wander around and affect your environment. You have mountains and trees and sand and rocks and things, sometimes animals going around, and you can basically just start digging in the dirt, or you can start, I guess, hitting trees with your hands to chop them into wood. And
so it's a true metaphor for the American frontier.
It really is. I mean, really, and so here's the thing. So you can play the game in sort of a free play kind of sandbox mode, or there are difficulty levels. And this world will pass time, sort of an abbreviated day-night cycle. And as you are kind of tooling around the world and digging or chopping or whatever you're going to do, the day slowly turns to night and monsters come out at night. You have zombies or skeletons with bows and arrows or creepers, which are these exploding kind of cactor-looking things. And so you have to – I mean, if you don't know what's coming, you're pretty much going to die. But you have to find some way to survive in this environment. So yeah, definitely. It's got that sort of American – it's made in Sweden, but it's, American at heart, I think. Yeah. But you can dig your way into the side of a mountain, and then when you dig these resources or when you get wood or whatever, when you get wood, you can you can then rearrange the stuff. So you can actually start stacking your cubes of dirt, or you can start combining blocks of wood into planks that you can use to build things. And the whole idea, they call it Minecraft because most of the most of the exploration that you're going to do eventually starts to dig downward, where you can get past the dirt and get into different kinds of ores and metals. And all you have are these component parts, but eventually you start to do things like you can use some of the wood to build a crafting table. And if you're standing near the crafting table and you have certain things in your inventory, well, now you can start to make more complex things. Like instead of hitting your dirt, hitting dirt with your hands, you can build a pickaxe or a shovel or a sword. And then as you start to get different kinds of resources, eventually you can combine those to make more interesting and useful items. And it eventually gets pretty arcane. They have different kinds of otherworldly. You dig down into the abyss, and eventually you get to this enchanted rock that will glow or will set things on fire. And they've iterated on this game a lot on PC, and the Xbox version is probably 2 years behind. I mean, it's not on parity with the release schedule of the PC version, of course. They do plan on updating it. They're going to be bringing in, from what I understand, adventure mode, which one complaints that people have about Minecraft in general is that it's very open-ended. You know, you pretty much, when you start the game, you just, there you are. You know, you have a randomly generated world, or you can put in a seed value to kind of create a world, and there you are, and you just get to decide what it is you're going to do. And so
there's always been the end game is to make a giant working butt and a giant working toilet. You go on YouTube and find people
what?
In the game.
No, it's true. And people make all kinds of, oh man, on PC, and you probably won't see this on Xbox. I mean, there are limitations to the engine in the Xbox. But Sean's right. People, one of the main things, I don't know that a lot, I don't really know how this breaks out either, whether the community is more into the, you know, kind of the quote unquote the real game, or what Sean's referring to is you can go onto YouTube and see where people have made a replica of the, you know, the USS Enterprise. Yeah, or all kinds of stuff. Or, you know, they've made a map of the world with different, you know, topographical, you know, like the Himalayas are very high and Death Valley is very low. I mean, people, and so they soar over this and you just see the just crazy stuff that people are making out of it. And so you can do that here. I mean, again, there's a little bit of a limitation, but very, very interesting. I think it's definitely worth trying the demo. One thing that I don't know about the PC version is if there's a demo. I didn't play this. I've been aware of Minecraft for, in fact, I actually, when it first came out as a pre-alpha, I actually downloaded it in 2006, and my history with Minecraft was very short. I downloaded the pre-alpha, got in, saw that it was blocky, a spider came up and bit, and I never went back. And so I sort of missed most of Minecraft, but this, I think it's a good opportunity. One thing about the Xbox version is that if you have an HD TV, and only if you have an HD TV, you can play it split screen. And so I've actually been playing Minecraft with my 6-year-old because it's kind of a neat way to do, you know, problem solving and creative, and, you know, Dad, let's build our house. Oh no, Dad, there's going to be monsters, and so we'll close the door really quick. And okay, I'm gonna dig a tunnel up to the top of the mountain so we can look down, and you know, and it's,
oh, digging tunnels is so much fun in that.
My question is, on the PC, there was the big thing about, you know, you could have your own server and stuff. How was that handled on the 360?
Well, you can basically open your world to be online, or you can just play by yourself, and I don't think they really do a server browser or anything like that. I have to admit, I haven't played it online because I've been, you know, too busy on my couch, but it does have an online mode, and you know, I'm assuming all of the functionality that you would get in a single player mode you would have in multiplayer mode, but I can't tell you too much about that because I haven't tried it. But really, if you have people in your house, I mean, this really, I would say, when people ask about good co-op, you know, couch experience on the modern console, I would definitely recommend Minecraft. I do want to shout out, though, I was never a Minecraft person, but quick little jaunt here into Terraria, if on PC, if you've ever heard of Terraria. Whereas Minecraft is a 3D sort of blocky world, Terraria is kind of a neat 2D version that you can get on PC. It's on, I believe it's on Steam. That's the only place I know for sure that you can get it, but it's the same type of idea. But whereas this is a 3D version, it's more like if you can imagine Ghosts and Goblins or something of that era. You know, and then you can still do the digging, and I think that has a lot more sort of adventure-y kind of an element to it. So I either, you know, for Minecraft on 360 PC, if you want Terraria on PC, I really recommend that. But that's been definitely a lot of fun. So beyond that, other sort of non-standard kinds of games, I've been playing a lot of my PlayStation Move games lately. A few games have come out recently, and I've had a chance to play around with a couple of those. The first one is Pixel Junk 4AM, which is the newest from Q Games in Japan. They also are for Pixel Junk Monsters, Pixel Junk Eden, Pixel Junk Racers. You know, they have a whole line of this Pixel Junk branded series. And Pixel Junk 4AM is a sort of a visualizer / DJ sort of music creation game. It's a little bit like, you remember when Windows Media Player first came out with visualizers and you would sit there and like stare at it right in front of your nose?
Mm-hmm.
It's, I was just thinking about that today. Like, you know, our kids will never really understand that because it's like, oh, it's so cool. Look at it, palette shifting. But the people at Q Games did a collaboration with one of their musicians, a DJ by the name of Bion, a Japanese musician who did the music for Pixel Junk Eden. And they have made out of the Move a gesture-based kind of a synthesizer looping kind of toy. I hesitate to call it a game, and the reason is that you don't really get points. You don't do really the creative process is sort of its own reward, I guess, in this kind of scenario. So it can be kind of hit or miss. Definitely, it requires the Move if you're going to be using it. So you will need a PlayStation Move 1 controller. Does not use a navigation controller, but everything is gestural based. So they give you a visualizer, and you have up to 4 tracks that are in a given song that you could be working on, and you can activate or deactivate tracks, or you can swap out any of the 4 tracks using gestures to the top, bottom, left, or right of your screen. So if you don't like the particular rhythm that you're getting from one of your 4 tracks, you know, you can grab onto a rhythm or another track from off screen, so to speak, and plug it into what you're doing, and it'll fade out the other one and fade in the next one. You can also do quick hits with the controller, you know, kind of like you're doing air drums, and depending on which way you jab the Move controller, you can get different little, just sort of random little sound effects. And I'm sure this has all been engineered by, you know, mixed to perfection by Bion. But you can also do turn on low pass filters. You can do, you know, by twisting the thing, holding down the Move button and twisting like a doorknob. You can swipe the thing left or right, and you just add all kinds of different effects. The neat thing about Pixel Junk 4AM is that if you don't have a Move controller, or if you don't really want to pay the $10 for the game, the visualizer or the viewing mode is free. I believe it's just a matter of downloading the demo for the game, and you can tune in live to other people who are making their own music. And as you're playing, you can see when you have new viewers, new people who are just kind of tuning in. You can also, if you're watching, you can give people kudos if you think they're doing a good job, and so you can actually watch as you accumulate kudos from people. And
they still make kudos?
The bars?
They do.
And unfortunately, you cannot send someone a real kudo, but that would be amazing.
Unless he's a shrill for Kinect.
Good.
Yeah, maybe.
Send someone kudos to know?
Yeah, exactly. I'm a big fan of Pixel Junk, and this is a really nice experience. I mean, I think the music is, I think they've done a good job of coming up with different complementary tracks that, you know, you can make a good song out of. But like with any creative endeavor, you're either going to hit or you're not. One of the neat things about techno music and ambient music like that is that you can make almost any sound, and if you loop it, it'll fit in, you know, more or less. But I find sometimes that when I'm doing this, I end up getting something looping from one of those 4 tracks, because you kind of have to keep, you know, keep in your mind what it is that you've got running at any given time. And you have to, you know, if you hear this, like, thump-tsh, 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 like, you're like, oh, yeah, that's good. But then you've got something that's like, rare, rare, rare. And you're like, you know, I don't really like that. Let me turn that off. Okay, wait, it wasn't that track. Okay, wait, now I just turned that one off. Let me turn that one back on. Let me go find this other track. Right. Okay, wait, that wasn't it. Oh, wait, it was one of my hits that I did. Okay, let me turn off my repeating, you know, little jabby thing that I turned on. Okay, there, I finally did it. And so you get a little bit of that. And one thing that I kind of wish that the game would do, and I asked Dylan Cuthbert, who is the head of Q Games, I was talking to him on Twitter, and I said, you know, I would really like to be able to get some more feedback on what it is exactly that I'm doing, because the visualizers, they're not quite as, they don't really give you a good indication of what it is that you've actually done. I mean, if you know what you're doing and you're saying, okay, now I'm working on this one of my 4 tracks, okay, crank that up, all right, turn this other one off, you kind of have to already know. And there is a tutorial in the game that walks you through that, but I find that I'm kind of missing my own plot after a few minutes.
Like, does it use the Move color, you know, the little knob on the end to kind of
indicate anything? It does, yeah. As you switch, yeah, it sure does. In fact, actually, I have to say, I am a dual wielder. I have 2 Move controllers, and you can actually simultaneously use 2 of them, and it's kind of handy to look at the glowing orb on the end, and mm-hmm. each track is kind of assigned a color. Yeah. So there are the 4 face buttons, the 4 PlayStation face buttons, and then you have the orb color to kind of help keep track of what's going on. And between the 2 controllers, I've been able to put on a couple of rave parties for my cats, and they trip out and you know, seizure on the floor a little bit, kind of twitch around, and that's a good night.
Is one of them named the Cheat? Because that would be amazing.
I throw light switch raves for the Cheat in my
Yay.
Kicking the Cheat. I wonder what those guys are doing, the Brother Chaps, but let's not talk about that. What I wish they would do, and like I said, I was talking to Dylan Cuthbert, and I said, you know, I'd really like to be able to see what it is that I'm doing. I'd like to know if I successfully turned on a track or turned off a track or mm-hmm. applied that low pass filter or did whatever. And he said, yeah, he said, but we kind of just wanted the creative process to be its own, you know, mm-hmm. We didn't want to throw out the discovery, which, yeah, I can see that. But as somebody who's, you know, if I have even for a few minutes, if I'm a DJ and I have a creative vision about the way I want my music to sound, I'd kind of like to have a little bit more idea of what I would like more feedback, more visual feedback.
I think the idea of this is that it's not so much about being a DJ. It's about creating a new type of musical instrument.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like the first time someone created a trumpet and gave it to somebody, they didn't know which one was going to make a G sound, a G note, or even exactly what a G from a trumpet's going to sound like. So yeah. I think the idea is that here is this instrument. Now everybody in the world figure out how to play it.
Yeah, and it's true, and I am impressed by the range of audio that you can get from what seems like a pretty simple set of tools. Like I said, the nice thing about electronic music is that if you could make something that sounds like crap once, but if you loop it, it starts to sound pretty good. Mm-hmm. My main problem is when I get something that sounds like a bull walrus and I don't know how to turn it off. And I know those people, those 15 or 20 people who are watching me, they're like, what is this guy doing? And I'm like turning off all of my tracks, trying to find that bull walrus and put him out of his misery. It gets a little wah-jah a little bit, but. Mm. But apart from that, you know, I think it's a good experience, but I think you should probably, download the viewer, see what other people are doing with it. They're also streaming performances from Pixel Junk 4AM on their Twitch TV, I believe. They've just got a constantly running Twitch TV stream. And also, it does interface with Twitter and with social media, so you can actually search for a hashtag and see who is, who's performing. Yeah, exactly. Who's pixel junking out there? Pixel crunking, I kind of like to say.
Oh yeah,
and,
I like that.
So you have a look at it, see if you like the kind of things you see from it. But I think unless you're the kind of person who really liked, you know, Electroplankton on the DS, or if you really like to play with a Tenori on some of those kinds of progressive kinds of instruments, you may want to dip your toe in by watching someone else first and see if you like it.
Yeah.
Mm.
The other PlayStation Move game that I've been playing is Datura, which is from the same people who did Linger in Shadow, I think it was called. They are a Polish. Yeah, it's the same people. So they're Polish. The name of the company is Plastic, I believe. They are they call it the demo scene. They're part of this demo scene where, you know, these crazy coding people try and fit as much as they can, as much content, visual and maybe audio content, into as small a space as possible. So that's what these guys are sort of famous for. But this game, Datura, is, again, a PlayStation Move game. It is the easiest way that I can explain it is if you're familiar with Myst or, any of those kind of first-person sort of environmental puzzle-y kinds of experiences. This is like that, but in real time. So if, what we always thought Myst is just a series of still panels that you kind of quote-unquote navigate from one to the next. Here, though, you do have a full range of motion that you can go through, and you do that by, changing direction on the move. It sort of directs your vision, and the main instrument that you use to interface with the world is this hand, this sort of disembodied hand that represents your move controller, and so you can sort of interact in a 3D space, and it's kind of trippy. A Datura, I don't know if anyone knows this, but a Datura is a flower that actually has like hallucinogenic properties, I guess. And so the game doesn't really explain what's going on, but you can kind of infer that someone's done a little bit of herbal something.
You can infer that from the makers of Linger in the Shadow.
Yeah, that is true too. But you start out it's just a lot of vignettes. I mean, you start out sort of looking from a first-person view. You know, you're in an ambulance, and you do things like pull the little biometric meters off of you. You know, the little stickers. You kind of take those off, and then the nurse gives you the defibrillator. So, infer what you will from the story. They don't come right out and say it, so we don't want to spoil anything. But The thing about that really kind of bothers me is the navigation. You use the face button on the move controller, the move button, to move forward as you're directing your motion, and then you use the circle button to step backwards. The different interactions that you have with the environment are very contextual. So if you're turning a doorknob, they have you line up the move controller with the doorknob and then, you know, rotate it or turn it like you're turning a handle. You know, you may throw a ball or there's even, you know, a little bit of BB gun shooting that you do. And I really got stuck trying to move around the environment. So one thing that I did, I want to give a little shout out to another website, iwaggle3d.com. If you're a PlayStation Move or a 3D TV enthusiast, as I am, you might want to check this place out, because I watched them do a demonstration of it, and it turns out, here's kind of an interesting thing, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but in Datura, they had originally built in support for the Sony 3D virtual reality headset. I don't know if you guys remember seeing that Japanese spec sheet a while ago. It was never released in America. In fact, I don't even know if it released in Japan, but they designed this game to work with this 3D TV headset, this virtual reality headset. And it turns out that if you have a second Move controller, it'll actually do head tracking with this second controller. And so I think this picture has I put it out there, but you may have seen this picture of me on the internet where I actually took my headphones, my sound headphones that I got, and maybe we'll put this in on the show page. We'll put this picture up so everybody can get a good laugh about it. But I used some Scotch tape and taped a second Move controller to my headphones, and I used that to do head tracking with this thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's just me, like, geeking out about my technology. I had my 3D glasses on and my surround sound headphones, and I had this thing taped to my head. But when I could move my head and actually look around, and I wasn't getting stuck in these weird, visual positions with my one controller, it actually made it, in my opinion, a lot easier to move around. I don't know how many people are going to have the opportunity to do that, but check out the website iwaggle3d.com for a kind of a demonstration of this head tracking thing. But I played Datura with that. And it was kind of a neat experience. Little pricey, I think, for that, and I could understand why a lot of people might not like an art house experience like Datura. But again, if you're into those kinds of environmental puzzle games, really trippy, interesting, maybe not very explicit storylines, something where you kind of get to figure out what kind of acid trip you're on, this might be a good game for you.
While we're waiting for Pixel Junk Peyote.
Yeah, exactly. Pixel Junk Peyote.
New brand.
We should probably move to our pre-3 discussion.
Pre-3.
Hey. Christmas is here.
I got some predictions.
Nervous. Yeah, so I think in interest of the fact that there's five of us, I think that this is the way we should do it. So we've broken things down into five categories. And I think what's going to happen is we're going to go through each one, and each person in the kind of the order we have, give one prediction. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sure. You mean one each for Nintendo and Sony, exactly, and stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, for example, first thing we're going to see is the Microsoft press conference. Rob?
I got invited, actually. Okay. Yeah, my prediction for the last 4 or 5 years, Microsoft's game plan has been they've been trying to hit various audiences in order to get their set-top Xbox in your living room and just sear your retinas with tons of ads. I don't think this year will be any different. I think they'll open with Black Ops 2, sans Robert Bowling. They'll trot out, sunglasses wearing Kudo to show off a few Kinect things, offer up a few empty promises or two, then return to close it out with, I don't know, some kind of hardcore brotastic game that Cliffy B will promise it will tickle our testicles. That's Microsoft.
So what will it tickle for me, Rob?
I don't know. Your virtual testicles.
My virtual testicles. My metaphorical ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to predict they're going to have some sort of new hardware showing. If not, like, the, Xbox 720 or whatever you want to call it, but or Durango. But at least a new 360 remodel, so that they can sidestep their Motorola lawsuit before they have to stop selling Xboxes in the U.S.
What was the lawsuit? I didn't hear about that.
So that lawsuit that they had with Motorola that means they can't sell 360s in Germany, the judge presiding in the U.S. Suggested that they no longer sell. It's the Xbox 360 and I think Windows 7 in the United States because of patent violation.
It was weird, and he said that he felt that the interest of preserving the intellectual property law in this case was greater. The import for that was greater than the impact that it would have on the video game industry. I think were his words.
Yeah, wow. And so Obama can veto it, and he has until August. August is when it would go into effect.
Now, what is the actual violation? What does it copy?
It's two things. One of them has to do with their Wi-Fi protocol, and I don't remember what the other one is.
So something really we encounter all the time.
Yeah. But basically, unless Obama stops it, and the only statement he's made is that I own an Xbox 360.
I thought he had a Wii. Helpful. I saw him picking up.
I'm sure he has one of those too.
The Ann Central. At Best
Buy.
I'm sure
he has all three because you know what? It takes a lot of money to get into the White House.
I'm sure people give him shit for free all the time.
Because he has so much free time on his hands to play all those games.
Yeah, such a fanboy too. Money hat.
But part of why the IP thing was such a big call was because they just changed a lot of patent. Obama changed a bunch of patent. You guys, some of you might remember me ranting about this on Twitter/Facebook a while ago, but they just changed a lot of the patent rules and IP stuff. And that's one of the few areas of law that actually is like most law things are different by state, but IP is one of those things that is sort of internationally/at least nationally recognized as a core set of laws. And they just changed a bunch of that. So that might be why that judge thought that it was more significant to make the IP precedent than the video game precedent.
Yeah. But so that anyway, to get back on topic, that was my prediction. They have to do something to curtail that. Otherwise, they're screwed.
And they're going to do that?
That's my prediction is they'll announce some sort of new hardware.
Can't they just pay whoever it was, Motorola?
Motorola. I'm assuming Motorola wants either too much money or just doesn't want to license it out.
Sounds like they've got a pretty good case, too.
Yep.
Okay.
So who is next? Sage is next.
For Microsoft. They are due for some hardware. It's been a while. I would predict that possibly they'll do something semi-different. Well, if I were them, I don't know that they'll actually do this. If I were them, I would do something a little different with Xbox Live because Xbox Live works pretty well and has been pretty successful at like adding things as they become more popular. Like they added Netflix because everybody was watching their Netflix and they made that capability possible. So I would think that it would be a good time for them to sort of like pull ahead of the market in that area and offer something else on Live that none of the other, you know, systems are really offering.
Well, this might be a little different than what you're talking about, but they did do they did announce that they are doing kind of a subsidized kind of like a cell phone sort of purchasing plan for Xbox Live where you can buy a console and get premium service relatively inexpensively out of pocket, but then you are on a contract or something for, you know, whatever it is, 2 years or whatever the plan is. So they might push that.
Maybe, yeah. Is that
your
prediction?
That's going to get the journalists just out of their chairs.
Totally.
Yeah.
They won't be able to control
Hip Hop Gamer. He's going to be doing it.
Yeah. I think it's a neat idea. You know, I think there, you know, any alternate ways they can find, because it doesn't eliminate the option to buy an Xbox, you know, however you want to, if you want to pay the full price and not be on a contract. But I mean, we buy a ton of cell phones that way in the United States. That is the only way that you'll buy a cell phone. Everybody buying their $600 iPhones, they're not paying $600 for it. They're getting into a 2-year contract.
Well, Verizon is saying they don't want to do that anymore. So I'll be really interested to see how that works.
Yeah. So what are they saying they're going to do instead?
You buy your phone,
maybe?
No, I think it's you buy your phone either from them or somewhere else. I think their plan is to make it easier to get any phone to work in Verizon.
Oh, I see what you're saying. But they're still going to offer you a lesser price on a phone if you get a contract, or no?
No, I think it's basically you buy a phone and then you buy a contract.
I like here in California, you got to pay tax on the full amount, and they say they're $600 phones. So it would cost you $300 out the door instead of two.
Huh.
Yeah. So that can be my prediction, but can I give Blue a hint on what his prediction should be?
Halo 4! Halo 4!
Oh, you should mention that.
You should not talk about that, because fuck that. Sorry. No, you should talk about it. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, actually, I was going to make a quick reference to Halo 4 getting either opening the show with a full gameplay demonstration on stage, or closing the show with a gameplay demonstration on stage. But actually, what I was going to make a prediction on was that I think Forza Horizon is going to be shown off, and my prediction will be that it's going to have more cars than Forza Motorsport 4.
That's a safe bet.
I mean, that had several. That had what, about 500 cars? Was it?
Does that include the ones that you purchased?
Not including the ones I purchased. I think it was wasn't it like a 200 on the disc and or 250 with DLC?
Yeah, I definitely think that they'll trot out their three or four big properties. You know, I forgot. I completely forgot about Halo. That shows how invested I am in the franchise.
Good job, Deagle. I didn't forget.
I'm ignoring it because it's not done by Bungie, and I think there's no integrity in the way that they've decided to make another Halo game.
Whatever, Sage. Here's your fangirl card. I take away Robert's nerd card, and I'm turning it into your fangirl card.
You know what? You can eat it, because my point is there's no integrity in being like, well, we want a cash cow, and if the company that invented this didn't want to do it, we're going to pay someone else to do it. Like, I think that's lame. Well, I'm okay with it.
My neighbor is in the Halo whatever weird movie marketing thing they're doing for it. So just shout out to Dan. See an old dude with a beard talking about being in Halo. That's Dan. He's my neighbor.
Ooh. Dan.
All right, Dan.
Do you think Microsoft will have a Megaton surprise announcement?
They'll have something. They'll open with something we expect, and then the next thing will be something that hasn't been announced yet.
Kinect.
That's what they do every year. Oh, yeah, and then a bunch of Kinect crap.
Like I said, they're going to hit all their audiences. They do the same thing every year. And then they'll have a couple guys in suits that will put me to sleep every year.
Rob. Man, Aaron Greenberg, is he still there? Is that his name?
He left after last year, didn't he?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, man. Sean.
Oh, Nintendo?
No, Sony was next.
Oh, Sony, okay.
Doing this in order that they're actually going to happen.
Sorry. Well, Sony always puts on a good show, and I really think with everyone forgiving the last year's, the network intrusion, I think they need to come in hard. Microsoft's Kinect and those 360 apps. And I think all that non-gaming stuff, that PCs do anyway, I think that should be Sony's target. And I really think that their appeal should be to the hardcore gamers. I really think they should push how powerful the Vita is in comparison to the 3DS. I mean, just really come in, show some badass games. The thing, the Vita really needs Call of Duty. Even if Sony has to pay Infinity Ward, I think they need to strike hard at Microsoft. They'll enrage all the Sony fanboys. And shit, how awesome would it be to see Kevin Butler make cracks about Red Rings, interfaces full of ads, having to subscribe just to download demos? That would be awesome. That would just get the power that they need. So I don't think it's going to happen.
Or they should do that.
No, that's more of a should. They won't. Okay. They'll play it safe. But Sony, I love them.
I do think they'll have Call of Duty there, just like you said, though.
They have to. Yeah, that's a must-have. So I really think that Sony's niche right now is those type of games. Microsoft's kind of going for that casual market, the set-top box, and they need to push the PS3 in the other direction.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that I think that there will be a PlayStation Orbis somewhere in Los Angeles, complete with an entire presentation, and that they'll only show it if Xbox or if Microsoft shows Durango, because I don't think they want to be caught with their pants down like they were when Microsoft unveiled the Kinect. And then they were like, we made these move things and we weren't going to show them to you.
Did they call them?
I think they just called the motion controllers, but there was very much a, we brought these just in case we had to, and now we have to. So I think they're going to do the same thing with the Orbis, but hopefully be a little bit more prepared this time. Mm-hmm. Orbis being, the PlayStation 4 code name.
There's your leak. I think they're holding back on hardware. I think they may announce name, but they're not going to show any hardware, neither Microsoft or Sony.
Not even in a locked room, not privately to developers.
Maybe privately, but I'm saying just for the. No, I think if anything, Microsoft will be pushed to do it because of the patent law stuff. But I don't think Sony will do it unless Microsoft.
That is a really interesting point, Sean, because, I mean, up until that point, I think people could say that Microsoft probably had the momentum, I guess. I mean, even though the momentum is bad all around and sales are down year for year, I think the conventional wisdom would say that it would be Sony that would have to blink first. But you bring up a very interesting point there. I want to say about Sony, there have been rumors. The rumor mill is abuzz. There is supposed to be some sort of partnership deal between PlayStation and a leading cloud gaming service. That's something that, I don't know. I don't know who it is. I do not know, but I can tell you who I want it to be. Ever since Portal 2 came out and they integrated Steam functionality into PlayStation Network and vice versa, I was a big remote play person. I would use my PSP to do remote play, which is essentially a kind of a remote desktop situation where you stream the visual and audio content of your PlayStation onto a small screen. And furthermore, the PlayStation has keyboard and mouse support. This is my pie in the sky. Like, I would love for this to happen. But what if, cloud gaming service to me is kind of sufficiently, potentially vague and misleading. What if it were Steam? And, they were going to take that Steam functionality to the next level where you could full on tie it to your Steam account or your PC and stream a keyboard and mouse game onto your TV from your PlayStation. It seems a little convoluted and I know that's not, it's probably not practical, but what if that were it?
But here's why it seems a little convoluted is you can attach a big TV screen to your already existent computer. So
you're
why
assuming
would you
somebody
not?
Has an already existing. A lot of people, especially since smartphones got big, stopped upgrading their PCs.
Yeah.
Not gamers.
Yeah,
gamers haven't.
I have not bought a laptop since 2007.
You're a very casual PC gamer, though, then.
But what kind of people, though, are on Steam who are... I could see it both ways. And like I said, this is not a prediction as such. This is more of a kind of a wish list item.
There's something already on Steam that mentions PS3. I was going through the settings, and there's some links to what is that, Sage?
Portal 2. Are you talking about the game wise or
no? There's something like on there where there's a link to your PlayStation 3 like account.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, well,
was
that's
that
what it
just
is.
For Portal?
It was just for Portal for now, but okay. The way it works is if you are logged in. So right now, Portal 2, as far as I know, and I'm trying to think about this, but I think there was what was the Xbox PC crossplay shooter? Anyway, that one had cross.
Shadowrun.
Yes, Shadowrun. Thank you. And as far as PC and PlayStation, Portal 2 is the only fully cross-platform compatible game.
Right.
I mean, your voice chat comes across. If you type to your friends, if you type to somebody who's logged in on their PlayStation, it'll come across on a little text window on their on their PS3. So right now, the only game that makes use of that is Portal 2. Now, I know that there are developers who have also been working on that, or that it's fully functional, in fact, but they just haven't been given the clearance to do that sort of thing. And Sony typically is a little more open platform than Nintendo, and they're more open platform than even Microsoft. But some of that back network stuff is starting to open up more and more. I mean, people like Chair Games, some of those guys have talked about, Microsoft being a little more open to, giving the keys to the gate, in the back network. And they've already done it. I mean, they've already got this Steam implementation on PS3, and it could be on Live, it could be it could be anybody, but I would love it if it were Steam.
It's going to be one of those two. It's not going to be like Gaikai, I don't think. But but I think it. The more I hear you talking about it, the more I'm thinking Steam is going to be it. Just because I'm remembering Gabe Newell's PlayStation.
God.
Yeah,
that was disgusting.
When he's basically gushing about it last year at the press conference and apologizing for saying mean things.
Right.
But
yeah, I'm gonna squeal.
Yep, I think I did not expect that. That's a good prediction.
Yes.
Blue.
Well, for Sony, I'm thinking that one maybe smaller announcement is going to be that PS1 classics are going to be available for play on the Vita.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's a good one. Good one.
I think that's probably long overdue. Should have been
Hell, yeah. launch.
Available at launch, yeah.
Well, what I thought was funny is you saw all the stuff about Buzz Lightyear, right?
But that was available over in Europe, wasn't it?
And, yeah, and when you download it, there's actually already a PS1 splash screen for... Like, it just doesn't have the emulator loaded, but when you try and load a PS1 game, the splash screen is like this custom PS1 cover top thing.
Yeah. Well, we know it's coming. And the other thing, and I know this is true for PlayStation Minis, I don't know if it's true for PS1 emulation, but the holdup on that is not technical, from what I understand. Mm-hmm. They just have to put those things through cert, because they, I know for some things that are at least minis again, that work in Europe on both the PSP, PS3, and also on the Vita, there is no difference. I was, again, talking with one of the developers over at Future Labs who did Velocity, and I asked him, I said, are they coming to you? Did you have to make changes to make the thing work on the Vita? He says, we don't have to do anything. He says, we're just waiting for them to put it through cert. There's a waiting list, and all that has to come through is that. So well, I think we know PS1 is coming, and
from what I heard, they want to certify them to make sure that there's not an exploit that can be used to hack and to open the Vita and hello world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good one though, Blue. That's a good one.
I think, and I bet it'll be announced as being available right now
after this firmware update. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then PSN goes down because everybody rushes and grabs their Vita and kills the entire service.
Yeah.
All right. So, Sage, do you have anything for Sony?
I don't know. You guys have covered the gamut pretty well. I don't have a prediction about it, but and I don't know that I'll end up getting to go, but I'd be interested to see how the presser is, because last year's was just such a, like, TNA extravaganza.
Yeah.
After their announcements.
Yeah, it really was.
Really? You know? I mean, they didn't televise that part, right?
No.
So after the televised part ends, you know, the curtain comes up, like they've got this stage they've been standing on, and this curtain comes up, and behind them are just these like huge hubs of consoles, each with like a basically naked dancing girl on just going wild. I mean, I guess if you're into that, but I think it's sort of a display that's not necessary, and I don't really like the idea, like, I hate booth babes. I hate that side of the market. Not
I actually
liked
it because a lot of guys were just so entranced with that. The games were open. Like, we went to play House of the Dead. We didn't even have to wait.
That's true. Yeah, so. That's a good point. And it does sort of separate the tit seekers from the actual gamers. So there is that.
Shocking off.
Well, nobody does a sizzle reel like Sony. I will say that.
Nope.
Right. So I don't really have a prediction, except that I'm curious to see if they sort of up that this year and like make it like trapeze, like naked trapeze artists kind of shit.
Cirque du Soleil?
Yeah, right. Cirque du Soleil do video games. Or
wouldn't
if they
be awesome
like,
if they're like, we're here with Cirque du Soleil, guys.
Did yeah. Cirque du Soleil do a Microsoft press conference at E3 a couple of years ago?
I think they're
going
to go all the way and do an Amsterdam red light district.
Maybe they'll get...
But do they have does Sony have the money right now to, I'm not up on their finances, so
no.
I don't know.
They'll totally spend on E3. They'll spend.
Yeah. So basically Sony Entertainment or whatever they call their video games part, that's the only profitable part of Sony.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then maybe they'll just be crazy. That's my prediction is they'll go all out.
I predict Will Smith. He's going to come out and plug Men in Black.
That would be good. Yeah, that might happen, actually.
It'll be too late for that.
Oh, when's that coming out?
He tries to neuralize the audience with the Move controller.
Oh, it's already out. This shows you how much I care about that.
It is already out.
It's out as of the time the podcast is published, but maybe it's not out as of the time we record it. We'll just leave that ambiguous.
Didn't it come out last week, I thought?
Shut up.
Okay.
Anyway, so what are we thinking about Nintendo, Rob?
I think Nintendo, they have to generate an interest in the Wii U and kind of bounce back after last year's was just a catastrophe. That was so confusing. Last year they showed a video and then they had to explain it and they spent 20 minutes trying to explain it and everyone was still confused. I think the
Except
only
for the fanboy who was like peeing his pants.
Yeah. The
one fanboy.
No,
remember that one that sat near us and was like, he like dropped his camera and it was just like pink. So
I do remember that.
He dropped like a $2,000 camera.
I will say though, my first E3, we went to the Nintendo press conference and they showed Golden Sun.
Oh, yeah.
I was so overwhelmed with emotion.
Yeah, you cried.
Wow.
Just like me with GoldenEye.
In tears.
Sean got so mad at GoldenEye. Sean got so mad at me, he threw like an elbow in my ribs when I was cheering GoldenEye. Just like, shit.
You go to hell! You go to hell and die!
There's no way that was going to be...
It was decent.
It was decent. Better than decent. There was no reason to get excited about it.
In hindsight, yeah, I probably shouldn't have got that excited. Anyway, I think the thing that they need to do is really hit their IPs. We need Mario, Zelda, Pikmin, Donkey Kong, shit. Even Pit better make an appearance. You know, they have to battle that the Wii U, that report is less powerful than existing consoles. You know, that's the elephant in the room. And they have to disprove that. I think relating it to the Wii is kind of a disservice. That well is pretty poisoned. All I hear about is the talk of when's the last time you turned on your Wii or where's your Wii, you know, in the closet. And I really hope that they show a ton of first-party 3DS games and really games that take advantage of the system instead of kind of copying, you know, Hollywood's, you know, 3D just because you can show 3D. And, you know, almost things like, you know, the last Mario game that really took advantage of the 3D. But, you know, the Wii U is going to be their big thing, and I'm not too optimistic for it. I'm afraid that the price is going to be high. They're not going to announce price. They've already talked about that. And there's going to be some concern still.
My prediction is that's going to be the first time of the show we're going to see Colonial Marines.
Do you think so?
I think that's going to be their big core audience, but not core Nintendo fan game. Is they're going to show Colonial Marines there. And there's going to be some interesting way that it works differently on the Wii U than on the other consoles.
Right. That was what was interesting to me about last year.
Draw a name or what?
I don't know, but last year they showed it as part of their presentation of here are some people already working on the Wii U.
Right.
And mm-hmm. then everyone was like, but they haven't actually started working on the Wii U. All PS3 screenshots they were showing, or video they were showing.
That's the one that Gabe Newell actually kind of walked us through, right? We went in the little...
Yeah, exactly. But I think they're going to come back, because they spent so much of that presentation last year showing screens from that I feel like they're going to come back this year and be like, yeah, it's the same game, but different, because look at all the Wii U stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they might say that's the lead platform again or something.
Remember when they announced
Smash Brothers, but they didn't even show a single screenshot?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was good times. Yeah.
That's the problem, making Smash Brothers.
Yeah, that was good.
Right. Woo! No, they need to, if they're going to, I mean, I've always been okay with the idea that Nintendo had these core, you know, we're going to stick with Zelda, Mario, et cetera, and yeah, that's fine. But last year's, it was all, so we've revamped this one for the 3DS. There's nothing new about it. We just ported it. Like, there was almost nothing that seemed significantly different. I mean, there were a couple that were like, meh. But I think the
Mario 3D Land was different. Mario Land
3D. Did you play it?
Yeah. No, I just
totally liked
it. One of the things that they did was they really kind of catered to a portable game. The levels were just short enough to play. It wasn't open-ended like the 64 version. And so it felt mm-hmm. like a 3D version of the old 2D ones, because you still had that kind of countdown timer and you still had to hustle. Mm-hmm. You know,
oh, yeah, I remember Mario. You had the issues with the countdown timer. That was you.
Yeah, I would almost always kind of run out because I was fucking around on each level. And so, you know, I'd get the little...
Super Mario 3D Land is the most joyful experience I've had in video games in the last 5 years, and if anybody says anything bad about it, I will cut you.
I think that it has Mario in it.
Wow. So he's going to catch you.
My Nintendo prediction really fast, return of Robbie Drums, return of...
Yes, a Cammy. Cammy also.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. We need Cammy to come back. No, actually, I predict that they're going to show Assassin's Creed 3 on the Wii U, and that it will not be shown by either Microsoft or Sony. It will be at Ubisoft's booth, but they'll only show it for the platform holders on the Wii U.
No, that's too big. That's too big of a property. Yeah,
I think they're going to show it at their press conference, and I think you might be right. I think that would be. Ubisoft tends to do that, where they'll show it at their press conference,
right.
But they'll show another presentation at somebody else's, so they get double the exposure. Right. And I think Nintendo's the one to do it at, because there's not going to be too terribly much to compete with as far as software goes. Nintendo.
Well, and also they're really tight lately, and you know they've been, you know, was it Yves Guillemot who was talking about Wii U, or somebody from over at Ubisoft was like, oh yeah, we love Nintendo, and oh look, they're so creative.
Wasn't that the game where they said that the Wii U was less powerful? Wasn't one of the developers on Assassin's Creed 3 was the one who first started that whole shitstorm?
Yeah, but I don't think that really matters, though. I mean, I think they're going to want to show – they want to show the game. They want it to make a big splash. It'll make the biggest splash on Nintendo and then on their own. We've seen the screens. They don't have anything new to show in terms of cinematics. Nobody's, I don't think, going to get really hyped up about that beyond just seeing it. But in terms of Assassin's Creed 3 showing up at a presser, I think it'll show on the Wii U, and I don't think it'll show. Maybe.
I think all three. I think all three.
Maybe in a rapid fire, all the stuff coming out. But I think they will actually show something, maybe not live, but I think they'll show it being played on a Wii U.
Yeah, okay. you don't want to have it at all three because you don't want people getting bored of hearing about it.
Yeah.
Didn't that happen before with one property?
I'm sure it has, and I'm
Call
sure there's a reason we've forgotten about it.
Yeah, Call of Duty, yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Modern Warfare.
All right, Sage, Nintendo.
Well, like I said, I think that they should release. It'd be cool if there was a new Zelda game. I think that they need to, because I think where Nintendo excels is in keeping the fans that they have. So I think they need some like new titles for whatever platform.
Give Zelda a rest.
Well, okay, but I mean. Pick one of the standbys, whichever one. It doesn't matter. If Metroid would be gooder if they actually like show us the new Smash Brothers. And I don't think it matters what console, as long as they have a couple titles that come out that are, you know, the ones that the fans keep coming back for and that are new. And then yeah, they need to do something with the Wii U that shows that we've got these games on it that other ones have and the graphics aren't as good, but you can do this other thing that's really cool.
I'm calling it Mario Sports right now. By Camelot.
I'm calling a Metroid squad-based tactical shooter.
Okay.
No, actually, I'm half joking, but I would love to see that. I would love to see Metroid grow out in some new directions.
I would hate to see that, but I still think it's going to happen.
That'd be so good.
Cool. You mean with the Metroid cross Star Fox thing that's been rumored?
Oh no, yeah, I forgot about that.
I'm going to vomit. I'm going to vomit right now. Blue, make a prediction that isn't that.
All your furry fantasies
there will be
can
nachos.
Come true.
Wow.
I guess for me, I think Pikmin 3 is going to show, and it's going to show very well. And I think
Pikmin 3 on the Wii U is going to be rad.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, I think they're going to make great use of the Wii U's touchscreen. Maybe for controlling Pikmin, or maybe using the old Command and Conquer, drag and select. Your Pikmin movement, maybe.
You think that will still be stylus based, Sean? Touchscreen.
I believe that. Well, last year they said it would be, right. Because they're using they're not using capacitive touch. They're using whatever the fuck they call
stylus one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not IR sensors though. It's something else. But it needs the stylus. Well, it doesn't need the stylus. It's just it doesn't work as well as your finger. It's like an iPhone does. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they'll change that because that did not show well last year. It's cheaper though, and that's kind of their thing, is they wanted that handset to be cheap.
Yeah.
Announce a price point, do you think?
No.
They already said they wouldn't.
They wouldn't talk about a release date, but I wasn't sure if they would talk about pricing.
They are going to talk about release date because they said it's going to happen. They've already said it's going to be fourth quarter of this year, but they're going to give a specific date, but not a price point.
Right. My prediction is they're not giving a price point because they're wanting to charge as much as they can for it, but they got to wait and see what everybody else comes out with, and they're going to try to undershoot, because that's what they always do. They're going to try and sort of undersell what everyone else is doing by enough that people are actually like, well, I could get a Wii U because it's cheaper and it's still got those games on it.
Well, you remember what happened with the 3DS is that they announced the 3DS and asked people how much they would pay for it. And people said $250. They were going to price it at $180. But when when enough people said that, they jacked the price up.
See, that's what they got to stick by their guns. I think they're smart people there, and I think they know what price point they're going for, regardless of what the market does.
What do you guys think the price point will actually be?
$300.
I'd say it's going to be between $350 and $400.
No way. Not that high.
What's the highest price for a... I mean, not taking into account inflation. But what's the highest, most expensive Nintendo console? 64?
No.
Wasn't it? Wii? Wasn't
it the Wii where 250 because they never launched a system above 99, I think it was?
No, because the Super Nintendo was 300 when it came out.
Was it?
Okay.
Yeah. I thought the GameCube was 300, but maybe I was thinking Super Nintendo.
Well, both, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
49 for the GameCube, I thought?
No.
Anyway.
199?
Maybe.
Because they had a handle on it.
Yeah.
How fucking cool that is that?
But what they did with the Wii was that the Wii was sort of less expensive, but it only came with one controller, and the whole point was that you want to play with another person, so you basically had to buy at least one more controller. So even though the console was, well, I forget what it was priced at, but you had to spend another 40. Yeah.
And it also didn't come with the navigation controller thing either.
Or games. Or, I mean, if you wanted any games, you had to pay for that.
Well, no, it came with the game people cared about. Yeah, that was the only game people cared about.
Right.
But, all right,
Metal Slug was a launch title. Fuck that. I was all happy about that.
I love Metal Slug.
Other predictions. Rob.
concerning what? E3 itself?
Yeah.
I told you before the show we were talking, and not really a prediction, but just gauging the amount of email that is based on MMOs. And I just think this is the year where the MMO hits hard and pretty much withers away and dies. I don't think the current American market can sustain that many free to play subscription based MMOs there. So this is kind of this is kind of the make or break year, and it's going to break.
Because the emails that we've got,
oh my
I've gotten,
and people keep pestering
emails
me
that are like MMO, come check out our MMO.
And then
like,
the fifth time, I'm not sure if you've seen this email, but hey, this is a really exciting MMO. It's like
not to mention the Old Republic not doing too well.
Yep.
Yeah, and if something like that is having a hard time, there's layoffs. BioWare associated with that. Then how can Joe Nobody hang in there? And I already think there's some really good, and I'm not pissing all over MMOs. I think there's some really good ones out there. I think Nexon, their stuff. You know, why else do you need to put something out there? They're at the top of their game.
Right.
MMOs are starting to be kind of like racing games on the N64.
Yeah. And
so thematic, damn many of them.
Thematically, I mean, you have these characters where, you have your tank, you have your healer, and they're so similar. And until there, somebody comes and really kind of reinvents the wheel and does something unique. I know, End of Nations coming out this week, puts the whole, real-time strategy, and you should probably check that out, Blue. You might like that. But too many of them are just very similar, graphically,
right, but I think
stylistically.
I don't think they're going to burn out, because I think what's going to happen is all the ones that are too similar are going to fail. And I think that because we've gotten a couple invites, and I don't want to reveal any details because that would be bad, but we've gotten a couple invites for ones that are not your typical tank healer, glass cannon. I mean, they're just not that way. They're like a completely different strategy style for classes. And I think that those ones have a chance at doing okay, because they're, if they're free to play and they're different, I think people will check them out.
Yeah.
My prediction, I just want to stick this in real quick, because mine's also MMO based.
Stick it in real quick, Sean.
I think Sony Online Entertainment has two unannounced games, and I think one of them is going to be, they're going to publish the Vita version of Phantasy Star Online 2.
Mm-hmm.
So in Japan, if you guys have been following it, Phantasy Star Online 2 is going to be free to play MMO, and they're putting it out for PC, Vita, and I believe Android and iOS,
mm-hmm.
Or I guess smartphones, but I'm not sure what it is. But I think they've inferred that it's Android and iOS. But I think that since they haven't announced bringing it to the States, I bet Sony Online Entertainment is going to kind of swipe it so that they have like one more bullet point for the Vita. Like, check it out. Can you play a free to play MMO on your 3DS? No, you can't. You can play the one that people might almost care about if you have a Vita.
And 3G?
No, you wouldn't want to play an MMO on 3G, but you had Wi-Fi connection, and you want to play Phantasy Star.
See, that's the thing. I bought a portable system. I'm not, I'm playing it on the train. I'm not going to have a Wi-Fi connection. It's really cool, but I'm not going to play it at home when I can already play my console that's already connected and offer a better, superior experience.
I think portables are really more geared for younger people, which is the interesting thing about Wii U's take on it, because you need a portable when, like, dad's going to come home and want the TV and you have no say. But when you're in an age range where it's your fucking TV and it's your house, then why would you, like, why would you play
TVs in their rooms these days?
Some of them do, not everybody.
No, about 70% of children do.
Yeah, it's ridiculous how many. In the United States, kids just have, because TVs are cheap now. They weren't cheap when we were growing up.
That's true, but there's still parents that are like, you can't play until...
Oh, there are, but they're not the majority anymore.
I guess so. Well, that's it. Bad parenting.
It is bad parenting.
I know the show's getting a little long in the tooth here, but I just wanted to throw out, does anybody have any PC-related thoughts? Or, I mean, I guess we talked about MMOs, but anything else that is specifically PC, PC-centric developers? PC's dead at E3 this year?
Oh, no, I think it's coming back. One of the things I think, I really do. Looking at the consoles and the probability of the new consoles being how powerful they are, I really think when the Xbox and PS3 launched, they were far and above PC gaming. But I think this time they're going to be neck and neck with kind of bleeding edge systems.
Mm-hmm. So the same content, just different platform, you think?
Yeah, basically.
Mm-hmm. All right.
The one thing I think is hurting is piracy. I think consoles are a little bit more secure in that. And so, you know, an emphasis on putting stuff, on protecting it, DRM, you know, constantly, like Diablo 3, constantly.
Offering a service, not a game.
Yep.
Diablo 3 is getting hacked bad, like all over the place. Oh, yeah. I've never gotten an authenticator before. And I, because now you can do it for free on your mobile. And I downloaded the free mobile authenticator because, like, people's accounts are getting hacked. Like, what? Like, they've put out a thing right now, like, just don't get on public games at all. Or if you're going to, make sure you have an authenticator for sure.
Mm-hmm.
As a warning, because people are just hacking accounts left and right, which is sort of too bad, but understandable.
Yeah. Too bad you can't hunt them down.
Hacks.
Click them to death.
Yeah, exactly.
Click.
So, Blue, you were saying yours, and then we'll wrap it up, because we're way long.
Yeah, I know.
I think two other predictions that I have for E3 are there's a rumor going around that Namco Bandai is going to announce a Fooly Cooly licensed game for the Wii U and the 3DS. Mm-hmm. And my gut's telling me it's kind of fake, but I'm going to just say that's going to be a prediction. It's true. It lives. Thank God, more Fooly Cooly.
And it'll be announced at TGS and we'll never see it in the States.
Might happen. Sounds about right.
My other prediction is that D3 Publisher is teasing something. They have like a countdown site going, and I think it's probably going to be a new Earth Defense Force game, and bonus points if it's developed by Sandlot. And that's it for my predictions.
All right, we're going to have to wrap up the show, though, because we are running really late, and I know it's even later for the people who aren't on the West Coast.
I wrote trivia questions.
I know, and now everybody's going to write in the comments how much they hate me because I'm cutting them off, but I'm cutting you off.
Can we even do our mailbag? We only have one question.
All right, one question.
No, let's do trivia.
Humachine asks, other podcasts talk about pancakes and Drive? But you just talk about games because we're a video game podcast. Let's hear a discussion about Battleship, D.I. Joe Delay, and the best chips around. Also, what have you kickstarted? Battleship looks really bad because it has Rihanna in it. G.I. Joe, it's a bummer, but it probably wasn't going to be very good. Best chips around are Zapp's potato chips from New Orleans, especially the sour cream and onion. I've kickstarted the Double Fine thing and the Tex Avery or Tex Murphy game and this pot that generates electricity.
Battleship looks like shit. I can't believe that they turned a game into that. There's no connection between the game and that movie. G.I. Joe Delay, I have no opinion about it at all. Best chips, Boulder chips from Colorado. Any flavor. And I haven't kickstarted anything because I'm lame, but someday I hope to.
Battleship looks like a Transformers wannabe. G.I. Joe Delay, I believe it's going to put it right the week before WrestleMania, I believe. So The Rock's probably going to be driving in a huge ratings for the WWE. Best chips around are either Munchos or Spicy Sweet Chili Doritos. And I haven't kickstarted squat because I don't think there's anything kickstarting Sailor Moon video game license translation ports whatever in the States.
Tex Murphy, man. Get on that. Anybody else?
Deagle? Lawman?
Trivia? I could give a shit about G.I. Joe. I was mad that Zero Dark Thirty got delayed a month. Chips, I eat popcorn, and Kickstart spent way too much money on that.
I agree. I agree with all of you.
It's
an
random.
Epic podcast for an epic E3.
Yes. Yay. All right. So if you'd like to compliment your listening with a bit of reading, might I suggest going to www.tech-gaming.com for the latest reviews, editorials, and weekly new releases. If you like our opinion about gaming and pretty much anything else, you can follow us on Twitter. Robert Allen is tech_gaming. I am Sean Nola with two N's. Sage Morris Green is at SamuRage. Eric Blue Swim is at Blue Swim. And Jeremy Lawman Lamont is Jeremy_Lamont. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. We have a new link and new art and the RSS feed. Something, something, something. Also, you should probably follow us on Facebook because we do that too.
Woo!
Yay!
Have a pleasant evening and something tomorrow, as that one guy said back in the black and white times.
Okay, and enjoy E3.
You're talking about the time of segregation, Sean?
I guess things were pretty segregated back then too, but I was just talking about television. Oh.
You think about Walter Cronkite?
Yes, that guy.
Okay. Oh. Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah, Walter Cronkite.